let's begin to complete the sixth chapter. Now, Krishna has explained in the first section how when practicing Ashtanga Yoga, one shouldn't give up Nishkam Kama or work, but his work should be detached. And then when one gets to the Yoga Rudra stage, where one's mind is completely under control, then one can give up Nishkam Karma. After explaining that, the practices of one who's solely engaged in yoga or Ashtanga Yoga are described in the long section from 10 to 32. There are many descriptions how one has to sit perfectly straight-backed. One's eyes have to be focused. One has to be fearless. One has to be free from any material desires. One cannot sleep too much. One cannot sleep too little. One cannot eat too much. One cannot eat too little. It's a very straight and narrow path. And ultimately, after a long period of practice, one can understand the Supersoul and focus his consciousness upon the Supersoul, and thus the same, achieve the same liberation in the Supreme as we heard about in Chapter 5 through the performance of Nishkam Karma Yoga. Now, after hearing of these difficult practices, wherein one goes to the forest, again there's that word ekaki, alone, in a secluded place. After hearing of these practices, Arjuna, in text 33, says, O Madhusudan, the system of yoga which you have summarized appears impractical and unendurable to me, for the mind is restless and unsteady. The mind is so difficult to control, and not only is the practices, practically speaking, so difficult for anyone to perform in the age of Kali Yuga, but the vision that Krishna has described in the previous verse, Arjuna sees as in the previous verses, is so difficult, and that equal vision for one who sees me everywhere, sees everything in me, I am never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. And in 29, he observes me in all beings, and he also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. This equal vision, wherein one is completely equipoised and seeing everything as the manifestation of the Supersoul, this, as well as the practices of Ashtanga Yoga, Arjuna does not think at all to be practical for him to follow. Because where is Arjuna? He's talking about Ashtanga Yoga, but where is Arjuna? He's on a battlefield, and he's supposed to see with equal vision the people on his side and the people on the opposing side, and Yudhisthira equal with Duryodhana, like that. So Arjuna places his doubt before Krishna, and he says, it's not possible for me. Maybe by the strength of intelligence I can do this for 3 days, maybe. But how is it possible to continue seeing this equal vision and yet practicing as I'm supposed to practice? So Krishna answers, what is the problem? Krishna answers, why is it so difficult to control the mind in this way? Because the mind is only the reins by which the body is driven. And what is the driver in that analogy? Does anyone know? The intelligence is the driver. So just control the mind with the intelligence. What's the difficulty? And Arjuna's reply to Krishna's words were, this is the difficulty. Chanchalam hi mana Krishna pramati balavadhridham. The mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, always churning, and very strong, O Krishna. And to subdue it, I think, is more difficult than controlling the wind. So the intelligence is sometimes compared to a sharp needle. And with a sharp needle, it can, like a sharp needle can pierce a paper. Intelligence, strong intelligence can pierce a difficult problem or a difficult situation. But what is Arjuna compared the mind to? Does he compare it to a paper and the intelligence can pierce it? What does he compare it to? The wind. So can a needle pierce the wind? No. So the mind is so difficult to control. It's chanchalam. It's flickering. It's pramati. It's agitating. It's always continuously churning, accepting one thing, rejecting another thing, rejecting the same thing it's just accepted, and accepting the same thing it's just rejected before rejecting it again. The mind is continuously acting like this, and it's balavat, strong, and dridam, obstinate. So therefore, in reply to Krishna saying that, oh, why not just control your mind with your intelligence? Arjuna says, this is the reason. And it's like a disease. Through so many years, lifetimes of letting the mind wander and wander to grab sense gratification, unrestricted, like a disease that it's in a very advanced stage, that it won't respond to medicine. This is the difficulty controlling the mind. And then Arjuna could say that what, and you tell me, this is the condition of the mind, what are the means to control it? Can it actually be done? Can the mind actually be controlled? And his Krishna's reply, O mighty arm, son of Kunti, because you are very powerful and you are very mighty, so you can do it with your strength. It is undoubtedly very difficult to curb the restless mind, but it is possible by practice, suitable practice, abhyas, and vairagya, detachment. So Krishna says, yes, he agrees with Arjuna, yes, your analysis of the mind's condition is correct. It's chanchalam, it's dvidam, it's obstinate, it's churning, it's pramati. It's so balavat, strong-minded. But through abhyas and vairagya, it can be controlled. But it's necessary. Just like even when a disease is advanced, if the person, the patient, is under the care of an expert physician, by regular, continuous treatment, abhyas, and the right medicine of vairag, detachment, then even that disease in its advanced stage can be cured. The expert physician has to be there, the guru, spiritual master, and the regular treatment, continuous treatment of abhyas, practice, and then vairagya, detachment. This is the medicine. It is possible by suitable practice and by detachment. Purport. The difficulty of controlling the obstinate mind as expressed by Arjuna is accepted by the personality of Godhead. But at the same time he suggests that by practice and detachment, it is possible. What is that practice? In the present age, no one can observe the strict rules and regulations of placing oneself in a sacred place, focusing the mind on the Supersoul, restraining the senses and mind, observing celibacy, remaining alone, etc. By the practice of Krishna consciousness, however, one engages in 9 types of devotional service to the Lord. The first and foremost of such devotional engagements is hearing about Krishna. This is a very powerful transcendental method for purging the mind of all misgivings. The more one hears about Krishna, the more one becomes enlightened and detached from everything that draws the mind away from Krishna. By detaching the mind from activities not devoted to the Lord, one can very easily learn vairagya. Vairagya means detachment from matter and engagement of the mind and spirit. So, Krishna continues to explain further about the mind. For one whose mind is unbridled, self-realization is difficult work. But he whose mind is controlled and who strives by appropriate means is assured of success. That is my opinion. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead declares that one who does not accept the proper treatment to detach the mind from material engagement can hardly achieve success in self-realization. Trying to practice yoga while engaging the mind in material enjoyment is like trying to ignite a fire while pouring water on it. Yoga practice without mental control is a waste of time. Such a show of yoga may be materially lucrative, but it is useless as far as spiritual realization is concerned. Therefore, one must control the mind by engaging it constantly in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Unless one is engaged in Krishna consciousness, he cannot steadily control the mind. A Krishna conscious person can easily achieve the result of yoga practice without separate endeavor, but a yoga practitioner cannot achieve success without becoming Krishna consciousness. Whether one practices karma yoga or jnana yoga, astanga yoga, bhakti yoga, these same points are needed. Controlling one's mind, abhyas, and vairagya. Now, after hearing how to do away with the difficult situation that makes yoga practice unendurable and so difficult, Arjuna asks another question. He asks a question, rather. The first thing he said wasn't a question, it was a comment. Arjuna said, O Krishna, after hearing about controlling the mind, he says, O Krishna, what is the destination of an unsuccessful transcendentalist who in the beginning takes to the process of self-realization with faith? So he's actually taking it strictly with faith, but later desists due to worldly mindedness and does not attain perfection and mysticism. So the person who Arjuna is talking about, he's practiced. He's practiced, but his mind has defeated him before his success. But he's made some progress. He's gotten somewhat away from material life due to his practice, but his mind ultimately, or at least temporarily, defeated him. What happens to such a person? So now Arjuna will clarify his question from 37 further. O mighty armed Krishna, does not such a man who is bewildered from the path of transcendence fall away from both spiritual and material success and perish like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere? Such a person has given up his prescribed duties to practice yoga, and then, so he's given up whatever good results come from prescribed duties, and then he's taken to yoga practice, he's gone to the forest, giving up his prescribed duties, then he takes the yoga practice and then gives up yoga. So a ribbon cloud is like in the sky. Can everyone see? There's a big, big, big cloud. And then one little portion of the cloud, due to the action of wind, breaks off from the big cloud. And as he drifts off, he begins to dissipate. And gradually, all this cloudiness spreads thinner and thinner and thinner until he disappears, because he's neither, he's not with the big cloud, and he just drifts away. He has no position, no actually nishtha or situation. So Arjuna's question is, what happens? The person is neither who takes up yoga practice and desists due to worldly mindedness. He's not a materialist, he's not a spiritualist. So does he just sort of disintegrate and become like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere? And Arjuna continues, this is my doubt, O Krishna, and I ask you to dispel it completely. But for you, no one is to be found who can destroy this doubt. And Krishna addresses Arjuna, son of Prita, a transcendentalist engaged in auspicious activities does not meet with destruction, either in this world or in the spiritual world. One who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. So there's a few interesting words, Sanskrit words in here. Kalyanakrit. It doesn't mean just one who's been practicing yoga is never overcome by evil. Kalyanakrit means one who is engaged in any auspicious activity. So one who is engaged in auspiciousness, what he's gaining, he keeps. It's his. It's eternal. Auspicious means any yoga path. Not just Astanga yoga, but any yogi, any person engaged in any legitimate path. And secondly, the word tata means my friend. But it's an especially affectionate word that means my friend. That one, it's used when one very affectionately, a father very affectionately addresses his son or a spiritual master, very affectionately addresses his disciple. Because Krishna, Arjuna's question has made Krishna's heart very soft, and he affectionately says, don't worry, don't worry. Don't worry. One who does good is never overcome. Don't worry. But what happens to him? He's not overcome, and doesn't dissipate. But what does happen to him? So there are two stages depending upon the advancement of the transcendentalist. So in text 41, the first less advanced stage is described, and then 42. The more advanced stage is described. So in 41, Krishna says, Prapya punya kritam lokan. What happens to him? He goes to the place where pious performers of the Asvamedha Jagga goes. In other words, he goes to the planets of the pious living entities and enjoys heavenly delights. Utsitva shashviti sama. Suchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brashta Vijayate. So he takes either a pious birth or a prosperous birth, one who has fallen after a short practice from yoga practice. So three things. Either Suchinam, a pious religious family, after he comes down from his heavenly enjoyment, and also or Srimatam, a rich mercantile or royal family. So this is the result after short practice. Purport. The unsuccessful yogis are divided into two classes. One has fallen after very little progress, and one has fallen after long practice of yoga. The yogi who falls after a short period of practice goes to the higher planets where pious living entities are allowed to enter. After prolonged life there, one is sent back again to this planet to take birth in the family of righteous Brahmana Vaishnavas or aristocratic merchants. The purpose of yoga practice is to achieve the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, as explained in the last verse of this chapter. But those who do not persevere to such an extent and who fail because of material allurements are allowed, by the grace of the Lord, to make full utilization of their material propensities. And after that, they are given opportunities to live prosperous lives in righteous or aristocratic families. Those who are born in such families may take advantage of the facilities and try to elevate themselves to full Krishna consciousness. So 41, the previous verse, spoke about, well, this verse that we just said, spoke about after short practice, and 42 describes what happens to one who is more successful and who practices yoga for a longer time. Or if unsuccessful after long practice of yoga, he takes his birth in a family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly such a birth is rare in this world. It is durlabh. And dimata means of those who are endowed with great wisdom. It's very rare to take such a birth in this world. Then what happens after taking such a birth? He revives the divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success, O son of Kuru. So from his previous sanskaras or impressions within his consciousness, he immediately becomes attracted to Krishna conscious activities and immediately takes it up again. The next verse explains this. He is riyate. Attracted. Purva bhyasena tenaiva riyate yavaso pisa. Gigyasar api yogyasya shabda brahma tivartate. He automatically becomes attracted from these previous impressions in his previous life. By virtue of the divine consciousness of his previous life, he automatically becomes attracted to yogic principles, even without seeking them. Such an inquisitive transcendentalist stands always above the ritualistic principles of the scriptures. He is above the Karmakanda section because he is on the path, the yoga path. He's a yogi. And when the yogi engages himself with sincere endeavor in making further progress, being washed of all contaminations, then ultimately, achieving perfection after many, many births of practice, he attains the supreme goal. So, here, like Jadbharat. So this specifically applies to those who are advanced transcendentalists, like Jadbharat. Look what he did, so he would immediately make progress after rebounding from his last birth as a deer. He immediately was so serious he wouldn't even speak to anyone because he didn't want to become again distracted by anything. He was so serious. And he doesn't want to take any chance of fall down, so he's extremely serious. And this again is true for all yogis. Now, so the two sections we read so far in this chapter, the section D and E, were the necessity of controlling that great enemy of the mind. Through what are the two practices? What are the two things to control it?
Practice and attachment.
Yes, and the Sanskrit words? Abhyas and Vairagya. And if you think about it, you'll understand why these two are needed. Now, the last two verses of this chapter are quite wonderful, and they create a perspective, and they practically end off the yoga ladder. A yogi is greater than the ascetic, that's the tapasi. And where do we read about the ascetic who performs his austerities? What chapter? Sacrifices?
Chapter 4, sacrifice.
Yeah, that was what I had in mind. It's also in chapter 5. I had in mind the part in chapter 4 where Krishna explains the different tapasis that one does and austerities that one does. Yeah. But here he's saying the yogi is better than the tapasis. So he's separating the yogi from the Astanga yogi, from the one who's performing those other sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas. So there are different practices on the yoga ladder, different types of yoga. One is tapasya. So a yogi is better than the ascetic or the tapasi, greater than the empiricist. Empiricist is the jnani. Get your flashlights ready. The light seems to be fading. Better than the empiricist, which is the jnani, and greater than the fruit of worker, and that's the Karmakandi. So these, the Karmakandi, the tapasi, the jnani, they have already been explained. And the yogi, because he's concentrating on the supersoul, is better than him. Therefore, O Arjuna, in all circumstances be a yogi. And yogi doesn't only mean Astanga yogi, it means also karma yogi, like that. And in 67, 47, thank you. And of all yogis, the one with great faith, who always abides in me, thinking of me, thinks of me within himself, thinking of Krishna within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. This is my opinion. So this verse explains that there are yogis, and the yogis better than the empiricist, better than the tapasvi, better than the jnani. But the one who is always thinking of me, the bhakti yogi, he is in a class by himself. He is not like the other yogis. He's in a class by himself. And because he is bhajate yomam, he is worshipping me with devotion. He's above all the yogis. He's in a class by himself. That's the way that the Sanskrit grammar leads, that this type of a yogi who is bhajate yomam, worshipping me, he is in a class by himself. He is the bhakta. He is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. So this really completes the yoga ladder, and we'll read the purport which explains it. But this completes it because we've heard up to this point that liberation comes when one's either nishkam karma or one's astanga yoga focuses one's consciousness on the super soul. So after knowledge one of that he's not the body or the spiritual platform, one focuses his consciousness on the super soul and becomes liberated. And then one is a yogi, the topmost yogi, but better than the yogis in a class by himself. The real, the best is the bhakta, the one who knows Krishna and is worshipping Krishna within. So that is the top pinnacle of the yoga ladder, or the worshipper of Krishna, or the bhakta. And the next six chapters will especially describe the process of worshipping Krishna and concentrating on him within. Now let's read some of the purport over here at the beginning. The word bhajate is significant here. Bhajate has its root in the verb bhaj, which is used when there is need of service. The English word worship cannot be used in the same sense as bhaj. Worship means to adore or to show respect and honor to the worthy one. But service with love and faith is especially meant for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can avoid worshipping a respectable man or a demigod and may be called discourteous, but one cannot avoid serving the Supreme Lord without being thoroughly condemned. Every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus every living entity is intended to serve the Supreme Lord by his own constitution. Failing to do this, he falls down. Then a little bit further down. The culmination of all kinds of yoga practice lies in bhakti yoga. All other yogas are but means to come to the point of bhakti in bhakti yoga. Yoga actually means bhakti yoga. All other yogas are progressions towards the destination of bhakti yoga. From the beginning of karma yoga to the end of bhakti yoga is a long way to self-realization. Karma yoga without fruit of results is the beginning of this path. So what do we call that? Nishkam karma. So Prabhupada here is making the distinction between karma yoga with desires and karma yoga without desires. And actually, karma yoga without desires, it is the beginning of Krishna consciousness. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that nishkam karma isn't even bhakti. Baladev Vidyabhusana says it is bhakti because it will give birth to bhakti in the proper association. So we take the more liberal idea of Baladev Vidyabhusanapad, and Prabhupada has in his purport to those verses in the fifth and third chapter, he's explained it as Srila Baladev Vidyabhusana has explained it, and explained nishkam karma as bhakti. But it has to be directed to Krishna. Then it is bhakti. The fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It's karma yoga, but on the platform of jnana yoga. And then when one's knowledge increases from nishkam karma, one understands that he's not his body. Right? And then he's really situated in goodness. When jnana yoga increases in meditation on the super soul by different physical processes, and the mind is on him, it is called astanga yoga, though that's a different practice. But it really reaches its fruition when the consciousness goes on the super soul. And when one surpasses the Astanga Yoga and comes to the point of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is called Bhakti Yoga, the culmination. Factually, Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal, but to analyze Bhakti Yoga minutely, one has to understand these other yogas. Because one can take to Bhakti from the very beginning and pass through all these different stages. One can start with Karma Kanda, and then getting knowledge, he can go to Sakam Karma Yoga and then go to Nishkam Karma Yoga and then actually get knowledge that he's not his body and then actually understand the super soul, and then he could transfer to Astanga Yoga, or he can keep going fixed on the super soul in Karma Yoga like that, and then he could take the step of understanding that Krishna is the source of the super soul. So one could take it in gradual stages. One could take it in gradual stages through nishkam karma. One could take it in gradual stages through astanga yoga. One could take it in gradual stages by transferring from one to the other. But the easiest way is to start right from the very beginning in bhakti and continue on that and reach the top. Therefore, the yogi who is progressive is therefore on the true path of eternal good fortune. One who sticks to a particular point and does not make further progress is called that by that particular name. Karma yogi, jnana yogi, or dhyana yogi, raja yogi, hatha yogi, etc. If one is fortunate enough to come to the point of bhakti yoga, it is to be understood that he has surpassed all other yogas. Therefore, to become Krishna conscious is the highest stage of yoga. Just as when we speak of the Himalayas, we refer to the world's highest mountains, of which the highest peak, Mount Everest, is considered to be the culmination. It is by great fortune that one comes to Krishna consciousness on the path of bhakti yoga. To become well situated according to the Vedic directions, the ideal yogi concentrates his attention on Krishna, who is called Shyamasundar, who is as beautifully colored as a cloud, whose lotus-like face is as effulgent as the sun, whose dress is brilliant with jewels, and whose body is flower-garlanded, illuminating all sides as his gorgeous luster, which is called the Brahma-jyoti. He incarnates in different forms, such as Rama, Narsingha, Varaha, and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he descends like a human being as the son of Mother Yasoda, and he is known as Krishna, Govinda, and Vasudeva. He is the perfect child, husband, friend, and master, and he is full with all opulences and transcendental qualities. If one remains fully conscious of these features of the Lord, he is called the highest yogi. And this is for the one who actually has developed transcendental love for Krishna. He is the highest yogi, and others are on the path towards that. Okay. Are there any questions or comments? First about anything we discussed today, and then we'll open it up towards anything at all. Okay, Govinda?
If a yogi, standard yogi, or bhakti yogi, falls down after a short period of yoga practice, and then afterwards, he indulges in it.
Afterwards what?
He indulges in all kinds of simple activities. Then, at the end of his life, you go to the
heavenly one would think that unless Krishna is, for his own reason, is especially merciful and specifically merciful, that that the person will have to suffer greatly for that. He won't just go to the heavenly planets automatically, because there's insincerity there probably. But Krishna, of course, can be especially merciful. But whatever he has gained is his gain, and gradually that will blossom again. That would be my understanding, though I'm trying to think of a specific reference that I know of where either Prabhupada said something about that. An example to prove that he automatically doesn't go to the heavenly planets is Jadbharat, who took a lower birth. Because there's the principle of whatever one remembers at the time of death, one will go to that place. But of course Krishna can be especially merciful to someone. That would be my understanding. Okay, yeah, you have another one.
And then if you are able to remove Krishna at the time of death, if you are not completely purified, if you are able to go to
If your consciousness is right, you would. But it's not just automatic. We can stay remembering Krishna, but what happens if one remembers Krishna? Oh, he's a nice man. I'm remembering Krishna and not aware of who Krishna is, nor truly in love with Krishna. So certainly he won't go to Goloka Vrindavan. It's not cheap like that. But on the other side, that to remember Krishna or God at the time of death is no easy thing, because the time of death is so you're terrified, the terror and the pain that passes through one's body and mind at the time of death, one can't even imagine. It's compared to 1,000 scorpion bites, right? It's terrifying, and you can't. It's not like you think, "Oh, I think it might be near the end of my life now, and I think I should remember Krishna." No, it's not like that at all, because the mind is completely disjointed. You can't breathe. You can't. The body is. Your mind is completely disoriented. It's the most terrifying. Everything that you're attached to is being ripped away from you. It's the most terrifying of all experiences. And everything that you are materially attached to, your mind gravitates to that for shelter. I once had a job when I was in Australia, and a man who was working with me would always come in almost every day and tease me for being a devotee, a Hare Krishna devotee. And then one day, one late in the evening, he walked in, and standing right in front of me, he had a heart attack. And I had to hold him up. And he was just, ah! And he wasn't thinking, I think it would be a good time to remember God at this time. He was just saying, I can't take the pain. In between groans, that's all he could say. It was shocking, the whole thing. And then he didn't die at that time, and he recovered, and then he was in the hospital, and every day he would send a message to me to pray for him. but it's the most difficult thing. It's the most difficult thing. The time of death is the test. But if we actually develop love of Krishna, there is no problem. That's my understanding. Yeah.
The description of this Jnana Yogi, Karma Yogi, Jnana Yogi, Jnana Yogi, the purport which you just read.
Yes.
So I kind of have some difficulties with this term of Jnana Yogi, Jnana Yoga, discussing before.
Yeah.
At one point, you explained that from one point of view, the Bhagavad Gita actually is rejecting Jnana Yoga. I understand there are different points of view, so maybe we can discuss this.
Yeah, well, someone who's there are people who practice Jnana Yoga. But it's not what Krishna recommends. So they're not doing what Krishna says. But they're practicing Jnana Yoga. Krishna's explained here that the same position or realization of Jnana Yoga can be achieved through Nishkam Koma. And that's his recommendation. But Jnana Yoga and Sankhya Yoga is also a legitimate path. These are where one renounces work.
From the beginning.
And and you see in Vrindavan there's so many so-called Mayavadi sannyasis who are karma sannyasis. They don't have any work except chapatis, you know, going from place to place collecting chapatis. So this is not recommended by Krishna. Not recommended. So the position of Jnana Yoga can be attained through Nishkam Karma, but the person at that time, Prabhupada is referring to him here, is called, it's Jnana Yoga, but he's actually a Nishkam Karmi, who's achieved the platform of, as what Prabhupada calls, Karma Yoga, action in Krishna consciousness. The realization is that you're not your body. And just like Prabhupada said, and then after the next stage, you're called an Astanga Yogi. But it's not that automatically you become an Astanga Yogi. You can still follow the same path. But that same realization could be achieved through Ashtanga Yoga. But Prabhupada is explaining in a way to make us understand this progression and how these chapters fit together.
Progression, the yoga ladder.
The yoga ladder. That's what Prabhupada is describing here. The yoga ladder. Other questions? Vincent?
Oh, just in the profile, I was just reading this sentence in text 40 about why they go to the heavenly planets. It's like about the, you know, midway through the first paragraph on page 352, it says, even though he may be subjected to the reaction for not perfectly executing prescribed duties, he is still not a loser. His auspicious Krishna consciousness has never forgotten it, and once so engaged will continue to be so, even if he's low born in the next life.
Yeah.
So it mentions the two things you're talking about. You get a reaction, you might even be low born.
Yeah.
It's still a loser.
Yeah, there's even in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there's a comment by Jiva Goswami that that if a low class person or a lower class person gives up his prescribed duties to take the Krishna consciousness, even if he has to go to, even if he has to suffer because he's given up his prescribed duties, he'll still be Krishna conscious. Even if he has to get the reaction because of that, he'll still be Krishna conscious, and he won't disturb. Excuse me. Because the thing is that we have to be careful of hypocrisy. Of saying, well, I took the Krishna consciousness, therefore my next birth is guaranteed, and therefore I can do whatever the heck I want, and I could break this and do that, and I'll still be okay. And after all, Krishna promises that he'll always protect, and also apichet sudarachiro bhajate mam, that whatever I do, even I'm rightly situated because I'm a devotee. So this is simply hypocrisy, and Krishna's not a fool. Huh? It's the greatest offense. Nam no balayasya hi papabuddha navidite tasi yamahi shuddhi. Such a person who commits sins on the strength of chanting yamahi shuddhi, he cannot be purified even by going to the court of Yamaraj. It's very bad. So rather than saying, you know, we want the encouragement maybe of yes, you know, how wonderful Krishna consciousness, take to it and whatever you gain it. But on the other side, we want the discouragement about taking it cheaply and thinking, oh, now I can just chant Hare Krishna, or I don't even have to chant him, or I've done something, I can do whatever I want. So Krishna's talking about yogis who just can't keep up the practice up to the right standard after a short time. But people in Kali Yuga, our sanskaras are so bad due to our conditioning, our tendencies are so bad due to the unfortunate birth in Kali Yuga, that we can try to do something wonderful, and then we can try to do the most wonderful thing, and then come to a most degraded position. But this is not the standard. The standard is you try to do something wonderful, and then if you don't succeed so well, at least you stay being moral. But we break that general principle, unfortunately. Instead, we go right to hell. So the point is that on one side, whatever we have in Krishna consciousness is never lost. That's on one side. And on the other side, if we take the Krishna consciousness seriously and don't make it right to the top, don't make it all the way, but you know, get entangled a little bit and lose our the strength of our desire to just become an unalloyed servant of Krishna, then maybe we will end up on the heavenly planets. But we don't want to end up on the heavenly planets either. That's not actually a good goal for a devotee. Because it's the heavenly planets are more dangerous in one sense than the lower birth, because one will become enamored on the heavenly planets. Yeah.
We have a question about the yoga level. I'm a little confused about the difference between Nishkam Karma and Jnana Yoga. Because in two sentences, Prabhupada said that karma without 50 results is the beginning of this path. So that's
Nishkam
Karma?
Wait, I couldn't hear. Yeah.
That's Nishkam Karma. And then he seems to say that higher than Nishkam Karma is Jnana Yoga, because when Karma Yoga increases knowledge and sensation,
that's the actual realization. The stage is that you're detached, and due to that detachment, you get knowledge, and the knowledge brings the realization that you're not your body.
So is Jnana Yoga actually higher than Nishkam Karma?
No. Remember, we're talking about the whole thing being achieved through bhakti. And this, we're talking about Nishkam Karma as a stage of bhakti. And within that stage of detachment, the next stage would be, okay, I'm detached, and the next stage is the realization of not body, and the next stage above that is realization of the supersoul. So this is all bhakti. But these are different stages in that. So when one is working for Krishna, superficially, he's first on the stage of Sakam, and superficially, then he's on the stage of Nishkam, and then superficially, he's on the stage of Jnana, and then superficially, he's on the stage of Astanga, or Super Soul Realization. But it's actually all within the stage of Bhakti Yoga. Sometimes the terms are used in one way, one time. Sometimes Bhakti Yoga and Karma Yoga are used completely interchangeably, because you're working. Krishna's recommendation isn't the Stanga Yoga, to go to the forest. It's to stay in Nishkam Karma Yoga or work and be detached from your work. This is the basic position that we're advised to act on in our Krishna consciousness. Work with detachment. And then, that's visible. That can be visible. You do your duty and work with detachment. And then, from that point, one may internally be realizing that he's not his body, internally realizing the super soul, internally realizing Krishna. Is that more clear?
Yes.
So you act on the platform of Nishkam even though you don't have the Nishkam realization or desire and hope for...
No, you need a doctor to prescribe to you how to act. And see, this will be explained in a little more detail in the 12th chapter too. In Nishkam Karma, you're attached to your work. When you have knowledge, but you're not attached to the fruit of your work. When you have knowledge, you're not attached to your work or your fruit of your work when you're actually realizing you're not your body, because the work is springing from the body.
So we can say that jnana is higher, a little higher.
The realization of that you're not, we can say that the realization that you're not your body is higher than the realization that you should be detached from your work. You follow? So if you want to call that the jnana realization as opposed to the nishkam karma realization. See, one has to understand that Krishna says different things at different times because he needs to encourage so many different kinds of people. So on one hand he'll say that you should do this, you know, that the unsuccessful yogi, you know, he goes to the heavenly planet, so that encourages. Because he's just described the yogic process that's so difficult that no one wants to take it up. And Arjuna even have that reaction, but he said, don't worry, tata, baby, take it easy. And just take it up, and there can be no loss for you. Even after a short period of practice, you'll be elevated and enjoy like anything. So there's the element. Krishna's tricky, but his trickiness is just like the father who sometimes tells the child, you take this nice sweet over here, and inside the sweet there's this medicine. So take it, it tastes so good, doesn't it? And it's sugar, candy-coated medicine. So the medicine, the sweet here is the yoga, going to the heavenly planets, and the medicine is the difficult practices of yoga.
Uh, Yes. And he never used this before when he was making the statement to Arjuna.
But don't worry, he uses it in the 18th chapter too.
Okay, so why is it that he's using it? It's just like a matter of flowery language? Or
no, after all, he's God. His opinion carries some weight.
Okay, so why does he use it?
Because Arjuna is asking him, you know, what he should do, and he says, this is what I tell you to do, and this is my opinion what you should do, and this is my opinion of what the philosophy is, so you should take it. You're asking me, I'm telling you.
So he doesn't put himself in this position that he has got in front of Arjuna.
He shows him the universal form later.
Yeah, later. But if he says that is not opinion.
But anyways, very soon he's going to tell him. He's going to tell him lots of other things too. But he's also said, after all, he said, the yogi is worshipping, you know, have his mind in the super soul. But the best one who has his mind on me.
Yes.
So he is putting, you know, he's revealing a little bit of who he is. But he tells everything gradually, but we have to be patient. And also, not only don't we have to be patient, we have to be unenvious, because Krishna says that I'm telling you this because you're unenvious of my friend, you're my devotee and my friend, I'm telling you this. Otherwise, you'll say, who is this Krishna that he has so much nerve to say, this is my opinion, that I'm God, and you should concentrate your mind on me. Who is this Krishna? So Krishna says that this book isn't meant for the envious, it's meant for the devotees. He says that in the 18th chapter. Whoever explains this to the devotees, success is guaranteed. Okay, so we ended up speaking some about the 6th chapter. Tomorrow we'll go on to the 7th chapter, Saturday off, Sunday test. But we'll try to keep a little bit of time to hear for you to read these and ask me anything that you'd like to ask me. We'll definitely spend some time easing your doubts about the test. The test is straightforward. It's made up and everything already. One time last year, I gave a test on the first 6 chapters, and I said, it was very easy for me to give the test. I just said, write down every section from the beginning to the end and explain in a sentence each section, and also but the connections between the chapters and the connections between the sections. But this one's much, much easier. So don't worry, I made it more specific because everyone complained so much, and it took like 3 hours to finish a test. But some of the devotees had it all memorized. It's good. Huh? A few.
No.
But you don't know which ones, though. So you should. But that's the real fun, when you understand what the sections are and why one section follows the next, and why one chapter follows the next, and why the 4th chapter follows the 3rd chapter, and the 6th chapter follows the 5th chapter, and why this is what we're talking about, the overview, the connections, the flow of philosophy.
I have a little difficulty in understanding why is Krishna, who wants Arjuna to fight, why is he bringing up the Astanga philosophy, Astanga Yoga philosophy? You told us already, Astanga couldn't understand properly what it's the situation. In a sense, doesn't permit to lose
waste
time. So
right, and Arjuna rejects it too, because when people think of yoga, because he's talking about yoga, so many types of yoga, but we're going to neglect talking about asan, pranayam. This is what people have that concept in their mind. This is yoga. So if it's not mentioned, or if he doesn't mention the Vedas, then it's going to be incomplete. So he's gathering these people in too. And because he's explaining ultimately that the same thing that's achieved by yoga, by Astanga yoga, is achieved by either Nishkam Karma Yoga or Bhakti Yoga.
So one could say he says it to defeat it. He brings it up.
It's not to defeat it, because it's a legitimate path, but to show its relationship in practicality and practices to Krishna consciousness. But one can achieve the same. But one can't exactly achieve Krishna, but one can achieve the super. One can. It is a legitimate path. Krishna would not recommend something that's not bona fide or explain it. But when he's explaining it, Arjuna can't do it. He immediately says, I can't do that. This equal vision is impractical, the practices are too difficult, the mind is so hard to control, because it's inactive, which is Krishna's point. And in any case, you can't take up this yoga until, even in any case, you should perform nishkam karma until your heart is clean, you're in the yoga ruta stage, which is very advanced. I also asked that question when I was standing. Because after seemingly rejecting activity, why is he recommending something that's basically inactive? Because all along, though, he's been saying yoga. Too. Yoga is considered more activity, and jnana and sankhya are considered inactivity. Okay, tomorrow.